Sam will wake you when you're falling, just before you hit the ground. And I swear I heard the angels calling, and heaven sent a lifeline down, saying we'll wake you when you're falling, just before you hit the ground.
Gus McGregor with Lifeline. Kathy Marston was talking to Michael Barclay. And the Byrne Ballet is visiting the Limbury Studio at the Royal Opera House Covent Garden next week from the 25th to the 28th of May. Next Sunday, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the actor Max Beasley. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and today's edition was produced by Chris Marshall.
A festival of light music.
Light Fantastic is coming to BBC Radio 3. Over the weekend, starting Friday the 24th of June, we'll be celebrating the best of British light music. From Friday afternoon music while you work, to a Sunday tea time performance by John Wilson and his orchestra. And there's a chance for amateur musicians to get involved right now. Go online to the Radio 3 homepage, download the sheet music to this, one of the most famous pieces of light music ever, and take part in our online orchestra. Get involved as we celebrate the UK's musical heritage. Light Fantastic, coming soon to BBC Radio 3.
Well, don't worry, you really are tuned to BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's a couple of minutes after 1 o'clock, time for the news with David Cornett.
The Sunday Herald newspaper in Scotland has named a footballer who it says is at the centre of controversy on the Twitter website over the use of privacy injunctions. The player has been identified in a number of foreign newspapers, but the Herald is the first mainstream British paper to print his name. The Herald says it's unsustainable for newspapers to be prevented from sharing information which is easily available on the internet. President Obama has said that he would approve another operation in Pakistan if he knew that a leading militant from Al-Qaeda or the Taliban was in the country. Mr. Obama said the raid in which Osama bin Laden was killed had been necessary to secure the United States. A spokesman for the Pakistani president said that the international community should work together to counter terrorism rather than taking unilateral action. At least 16 people have died in a series of explosions in Iraq. More than a dozen bombs went off in and around Baghdad. Most of the victims were police officers and soldiers. The attacks have come on the day that the British military has finally ended its mission in Iraq, with the withdrawal of Royal Navy personnel who've been training Iraqi security forces. The Transport Secretary, Philip Hammond, says the latest volcanic eruption in Iceland is unlikely to affect flights over the United Kingdom. Iceland's main airport was closed and domestic flights were cancelled when ash began spewing from the Grímsvötn volcano. Last year, ash from another Icelandic volcano drifted south, forcing the closure of European airspace for several days. A post-mortem examination is to be carried out on a pilot whale which died in a loch in the Hebrides. It was with a pod of around 60 whales that appeared in Loch Carnan in South Uist on Thursday. Marine rescuers are trying to find the rest of the group because of fears that they may become beached. And the weather, it'll be mostly bright, with the odd shower and strong gusty winds reaching gale force in places. Most areas will become dry this evening, but some showers will remain in the northwest, turning heavier overnight. BBC News and weather at 4 minutes past one.
With David Cornett, I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. In an hour's time at 2 o'clock, we'll be hearing a piano recital given last week at the Royal Festival Hall in London by Lang Lang. He'll be starting with Bach's Partita No. 1 in B-flat, then he'll play Schubert's Piano Sonata in B-flat, Deutsch 960, and he'll end with Chopin's 12 studies from the Opus 25 set. That's our Sunday concert, which starts at 2 o'clock. But now, the early music show, and Catherine Bott's thoughts take her far back through the mists of time.
A plangent call from the Dark Ages. Today, merely introducing an edition of the early music show. But in the 9th century, it was the sound of those marauding, plundering Vikings. But a spot of lateral rethinking leads to the commonsensical fact that the medieval Norsemen, presented to us as charging around laying waste to civilised Europe for fun and booty, were actually perfectly respectable tradesmen underneath their horned helmets. They didn't just loot, they bought and sold. OK, the ultimate aim was Scandinavian expansion, but the byproduct was a network of trading posts along the coastlines of the North and Baltic Seas. These trading posts gradually expanded into a network of mercantile towns spreading inland from the coast. And by the 13th century, a town would have its own hansa, or guild, to protect the interests of the emerging mercantile class, who lived not by the knightly code of chivalry, but by the rules of the bourgeoisie. From that word, hansa, comes the Hanseatic League, an economic alliance of the trading cities that flourished in northern Europe for several hundred years. Former Hanseatic towns are still recognisable today, with their grand town halls in front of huge marketplaces, their opulently gabled houses built for rich men, and their high church towers. The Viking horn was heard no more, replaced by the calls of the town waits, with sackbut and cornet players sounding signals from those high towers. And these were the musicians who would be central to the town's general musical entertainment.
Thank you.
Samuel Scheidt's Canzon Super O Nachbar Roland, Neighbour Roland, played by the English Cornet and Sackbut Ensemble. Neighbours. Everybody needs good neighbours. Today's programme takes a brief look at the history and background of that most neighbourly trade empire, the Hanseatic League, and its impact on music. How far did the Hanseatic League spread? Well, here's a rough and non-inclusive guide. Get out your map of Northern Europe and look for Cologne. Move your finger northeast to Bremen, then follow the south coast of the Baltic Sea, noting on your way Rostock, Gdansk in Poland, Riga in Latvia, and going all the way to Tallinn, capital of Estonia. That's just half a dozen of the largest Hanseatic towns. The League went as far south as Krakow in Poland and as far west as Dinan in France. And it had outposts in Britain on its North Sea side, London, Norwich, Hull, Edinburgh and King's Lynn. The main home of the Hanseatic League, though, was Germany, which was filled with towns where musicians were highly valued, in part because if you could afford to employ them, you must be rich and successful. And just as the land and sea routes of the League became well-trodden, so the latest ideas in music and culture were spread around to be taken up by different member towns and cities. Hamburg was a hugely important free Hansa town. Hamburg-born composer Dietrich Becker was the son of an organist, and he married the daughter of a gunsmith. After a few years working away as a court violinist, he came back to the musically fertile environment of his hometown to improve his skill in his profession, it was said. He joined the town band, eventually becoming its director. This is a canzona from his collection entitled Musical Spring Fruits. Thank you. a canzona by Dietrich Becker, town musician of 17th century Hanseatic Hamburg, played by Weser Renaissance, directed by Manfred Cordes. The real apogee of the Hanseatic League was centuries before that piece was written. Back in the early days, the High Middle Ages, any prosperous town would have been filled with minstrels and travelling showpeople, acrobats, puppeteers and trainers of dancing bears. They may have been vastly diverting, but they were regarded with suspicion and seldom accorded the same civic rights as those enjoyed by the people who applauded and threw them money. But from the 13th century on, the good burghers of Hanseatic towns like Cologne, Rostock and Hamburg took a more charitable and more pragmatic view. They granted musicians and their like official status, which enabled them to buy houses and become part of the establishment. And once minstrels were official, their numbers could be regulated. These numbers varied. In Hamburg, only four at a time were permitted to appear at festivals, but in Bremen, you could have eight at your wedding. Not much of what the minstrels played has come down to us, but the perennial German love of folk song helps us trace an echo of what it must have sounded like. Here are three pieces that bring those days back. First, Winter Will Have to Yield, from one of the first notated collections of German secular song, the Lochamer Liederbuch. Then a song about a pirate. Piracy was much on the minds of a people whose livelihood was founded on ships and trade. The song tells of a real-life 14th century German pirate called Störtebeker, whose name means empty the mug with one gulp. That's a 4-litre mug of beer. All medieval German pirates had this skill, apparently, and I expect they all said "Arr!" afterwards. Legend has it that when Störtebeker and his crew were captured and sentenced to death, he asked for the release of all the men he could walk past after he himself had been beheaded. And amazingly, his headless corpse rose from the block and staggered past 11 of them before the executioner tripped him up and then beheaded all his piratical crew. The last of these three bits of minstrelsy is Jakob Obrecht's reworking of the popular tune Tandernacken. First, Winter Will Have to Yield, a song from the Lochamer Liederbuch.
Der Sommer kommt um die Gleiche, es freut sich mein Gedank. Und derselben Weil kommt mir das heilige Teil von dir, Liebsten, ein lieblich unbefangen. Je, dass ich mit dir sollt, wenn ich wollt, nach Rosen in den Garten kann. Mit dir tu ich kein Gange nach Rosen auf die Heid, wohin, do ist noch lange, wie das es kommt die Zeit. Dass dir es kein Werden, dein Zeugs Begehren, der meinen Leer, geht sich auf Kummer und auf Leid. Wie möcht wir's überwinden sollt, wir's nicht finden, die hübschen Rüstlein gemeint. Doran wollt ich dich führen, zu Rüstlein grau und blau.
Störtebeker und König
Albrecht's setting of the traditional song Tandernacken, with Manfred Cordes directing the Players of Weser Renaissance. And before it, we heard the tale of the pirate Störtebeker, recounted by the Hanover Boys Choir under Heinz Hennig. And to begin that set, a song from the Lochamer Liederbuch, The Winter Will Have to Yield, performed by baritone Martin Hummel with ensemble Dulce Melos, directed by Mark Livon. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and today I'm investigating the music of the Hanseatic League. So, if your town was in the League, it would be prosperous and trading regularly with similar towns all over Northern Europe. Civic dues would be accompanied by the playing and singing of licensed musicians. What other benefits were there? Education was one of them. There was a great wave of new universities. The one in Rostock in northern Germany was a good example. It was founded in 1419 with professorial salaries paid by the town rather than being funded by church or princes. Its students, mainly the sons of wealthy merchants and councillors, came largely from provinces within the Hansa's trade network. And the university register shows a large number of Danish, Swedish, Norwegian and Finnish names. So the Vikings of yore were coming to Germany, not to pillage and loot, but to get degrees. Music was important to the curriculum. In fact, you couldn't get a master's degree without attending lectures on musical theory. And Rostock University was called the Beacon of the North.
Oh,
Music from the Rostock Student Songbook played by the Heinrich Isaac Ensemble. Something that can still be enjoyed today in Hansa towns is the architecture, especially the civic pride represented by the ornate frontages of town halls. If I seem to be saying that all that mattered to the members of the League was worldly wealth and a good night out, I should correct that now. Splendid churches with high towers that could be seen for miles around were also essential. And inside them, equally splendid new organs were installed to accompany worship. And an important school of organ playing came out of the Hanseatic League. A good example of that is the career of Heinrich Scheidemann, born in around 1595. Most of his working life was spent in Hamburg, where he was organist at the Church of St. Catherine. His compositions were greatly influenced by the style of his teacher, Sweelinck, but he translated the idioms of the English and Flemish virginalists into music that was specifically designed to show off the capabilities of the North German Baroque organ. And this pioneering organ music was disseminated throughout the Hanseatic League. Here's a piece by Scheidemann played on the North German organ in Örgryte New Church, Gothenburg, in Sweden.
Thank you.
Karin Nelson playing part of Heinrich Scheidemann's Magnificat Primi Toni on a North German Baroque organ. The real heart of the Hanseatic League was the German town of Lübeck. It was among the first to begin organised trading, and it was declared a free imperial city in 1227, the only such city east of the River Elbe. It was the scene of the first general diet of the Hansa in 1356, so a church job in Lübeck was one of the most sought after in the league. In the very last days of Hanseatic importance, the city still had a star organist in the person of Dietrich Buxtehude. He moved to St. Mary's Church in 1668, married the daughter of his predecessor, and as well as directing the music for services, developed the church's evening concerts, the Abendmusiken.
Schönen süßen Lieder drei. bricht, lassen Sie das Danken nicht zu geschwind.
So geschwind der Tag anbricht, lassen Sie das Danken nicht. Lassen Sie das Danken nicht.
Wilson directing La Cappella Ducale and Musica Fiata in a devotional piece by Buxtehude, organist in Lübeck. The Hansa towns had strict rules about music for weddings. The aim was to avoid inappropriate extravagance and perhaps to make sure that people of various classes knew their places. For example, the carriage trade were allowed a maximum of 3 pieces of music during a nuptial mass, and the lower orders, who were entitled to a half-nuptial mass, could have just 2 pieces of music. At the wedding breakfast, the toffs could have up to 8 musicians, other ranks 4. But then, as now, a wedding day was a glorious excuse for showing off, so the rules were often ignored. Any specially written piece of music was usually presented to the bride and groom in a lavishly bound volume, which is how so many of them have come down to us. Let's hear 2 17th-century pieces which might well have cropped up on the happiest day of one couple's life in Greifswald, a university town on a par with Rostock in its day. Their composer, Johann Fierdank, began his career as a chorister in Dresden, where Schütz noticed that he was making a good, solid beginning in composition.
Thank you.
Wedding music from Greifswald, a capriccio and I Rejoice in the Lord by Johann Fierdank, performed by Weser Renaissance, directed by Manfred Cordes. By the 15th century, it must have seemed that the Hanseatic League would flourish eternally. But it wasn't popular everywhere. Many trading communities disliked its expansionism and insularity. For example, in 1597, Queen Elizabeth of England expelled the League from London, and the Swedish Empire began to take over the Baltic trading routes. What really did for the League was a combination of external difficulties and the increasing self-interest of member cities. The last formal meeting in 1669 was attended by representatives of just 9 cities, and only Lübeck, Hamburg and Bremen stayed on till the bitter end in 1862. But today, there are still several Dutch and German cities that call themselves Hansa. As one writer puts it, many a former Hanseatic town still beckons the traveller from afar with its distinctive silhouette. Every brick reflects the economic power and political aspirations of the medieval bourgeoisie. So, it's still making its presence felt. The Belgian city of Antwerp was only a Hanseatic outpost, but this 16th century madrigal by Andreas Pevenage will do very well as an elegy for the glory days of the Hanseatic League. Clio, chantons dissertement, Clio, let us sing the praises of Antwerp and its people, is performed by Weser Renaissance.
Andreas Pevenage's madrigal Clio Chantant Désertement, performed by Vesa Renaissance and Manfred Cordes. Today's early music show on the Hanseatic League was presented by Catherine Bott and produced by Chris Wines. The Hanseatic League is one of the themes of this year's Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music, and in next week's early music show on Saturday, just after 1 o'clock, Lucy Skeeping will be introducing the first in a series of recordings from this year's festival. Well, looking ahead to 4 o'clock this afternoon, Choral Evensong, and there's another chance to hear last Wednesday's service from St Edmundsbury Cathedral in Bury St Edmunds. Music by Leighton, Wood, Bairstow and Herbert Howells. Choral Evensong, 4 o'clock this afternoon. But now it's time for the Sunday concert, which takes us to the Royal Festival Hall for a much-awaited recital by the Chinese pianist Lang Lang, recorded on Tuesday. It's presented by Andrew McGregor.
I came across a magazine interview a couple of weeks ago which began like this. Lang Lang, 28, performed his first public recital at the age of five and all his concerts sell out. Such a bold statement, and with most musicians you'd suspect hyperbole or the exaggeration of a PR machine. But in the case of this Chinese pianist, it's probably no more than the simple truth. It's certainly the case with this Lang Lang Inspires project here at the Royal Festival Hall in London, where he's offering audiences the chance to see and hear him in several guises. There's this solo recital of Bach, Schubert and Chopin. There's a concert of concertos with the Brazilian Youth Orchestra and its 17-year-old conductor. There's chamber music with Lang Lang's friends Vadim Rapin and Misha Maisky. And a massed piano day where Lang Lang's joined by 100 young pianists aged between 5 and 24 from all over the UK in a multiple piano event involving 50 instruments. There aren't many pianists who could inspire the hundreds of entries from which Lang Lang chose those performers. But here we have Lang Lang to ourselves, and to end his recital he'll be playing Frédéric Chopin's set of 12 Opus 25 Etudes, studies that stretch a pianist's technique as musically as possible. In the middle, there's Schubert's B-flat major sonata, Deutsch 960, the last of his late great masterpieces for piano, and before it, Lang Lang plays music by Johann Sebastian Bach, his Partita No. 1 in B-flat. Bach's partitas are basically suites of movements based on popular dance forms, and the set of six partitas were the first pieces Bach had published as his Opus 1 with the title Klavierübung, which you could translate as keyboard practice. It undersells their musical qualities quite considerably, just as calling Chopin's Opus 25 a set of studies doesn't begin to do them justice. Bach's Partita No. 1 is a suite of seven pieces. After the opening prelude, there's an allemande, a courante, sarabande, two minuets, and a final gigue. And here to perform Bach to this full house at the Royal Festival Hall is the young man everyone's come to see and hear, Lang Lang.